It's so good to see all of you. When I come here, I have just the biggest heart-opening experience. I always start to weep in my seat, think, how in the world am I going to talk between the energy here and the history that so many of us have together, and then the songs that you choose and use me. It's like, oh, my God. Anyway, I'm here. I'm talking. And I welcome all of you here today. Thank you so much for coming. And Lee, I haven't seen you for years. You came and sang at Pacific Church a number of times, and it's wonderful to see you again and to hear how your career has just expanded. And what a perfect song for today. And Nan's meditation was perfect for my talk today, too. So thank you. So you're my vision family. I love that. I love that. And I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Reverend Patty, not because she acknowledged me. It's not a tit-for-tat kind of thing. But we had a wonderful moment sitting in the meadow at Asilomar in the fog, you know, waiting for the new ministers to be acknowledged. And it was just a lovely connection. I will always remember it. And I got caught up on Larry and the kids and, you know, everything that's happening. And she didn't say too much about everything that's going on at the church, but I want you to know that I know what it takes to be a minister of a spiritual community. And it takes a lot to persevere and to carry on through time. And you have a minister who is a jewel and a gem, and I'd like her to stand up so we can acknowledge her. True. I love you. So great. So you have a theme this month, forever learning. Boy, isn't that the truth? Is that not the truth, forever learning? And, you know, that's the up and the downside of the spiritual path. The up and the downside. We are forever learning, and that's glorious, and it's also difficult. And we're forever given the opportunities to awaken to the greater truth of who we are and what we are in God and what God is within us. And we are forever guided to more effective living if we're paying attention. If we are willing to engage in life in a conscious way, to work with what shows up, to move out of being victimized by life, a sense of life being done to us, and instead move into the place where we're the conscious co-creator, as Nan said in her meditation, then we have the opportunity to really use life in a way to keep sending us up the spiral to higher levels of living and higher levels of understanding. If we are understanding that what we're living from in terms of our consciousness and our beliefs and our thoughts unfurls around us, the people, places, and things that we experience, then we have an opportunity to get more in the driver's seat of our life, so to speak, not controlling everything, but certainly having influence, and begin to shift and make changes the way we would like to see them. Because what we are living from unfurls around us as the people, places, and things that we experience. Now, are we in control of every single thing? No. But your consciousness is the filter that generates your life and also provides the interpretation that you give to everything. And Ernest Holmes says this really interesting thing. He says, we're not punished for our mistakes, but by them. Should I say it again? We're not punished. It's an important distinction. This is our view of God. We're not punished for our mistakes. There isn't punishment meted out to us when we make a mistake, but we will experience the consequence of what we set in motion. That's the downside of the learning path. That's the difficult part. We will experience the consequence of what we ourselves set in motion. Or another way of saying something like this comes from Hafiz. And he said, you can come to God dressed for dancing or be carried to his ward on a stretcher. You can come to God dressed for dancing or be carried to his ward on a stretcher. This has particular relevance to me, for me, because I was carried on a stretcher to God's ward a couple of months ago, which I will tell you about. But the point for today is that if we live life in conscious fashion, if we work with what shows up and what we ourselves generate, we will find ourselves on a pathway to a greater experience of our unity with God. We say all paths lead to God. We're usually talking about other religions when we say that. all paths lead to God. All personal paths lead to God. And sometimes, as the song says, we're kicking and screaming down the road to transformation. But if we will move with the dance of life and use what's there, we will find ourselves moving to God on a more consistent level all of the time. And we start knowing God and I are one. Nan had that in her meditation too, and that's the phrase that came for me. I said we were channeling each other. So please say, God and I are one. And you know, when we first start using that or coming into that realization, I think we think we're sort of stuck onto the side of God. You know, God and I are one because we're leaning into each other and there's cosmic glue or something. But when we are with that realization, God and I are one, over a long period of walking the spiritual path, it becomes a statement of divine identity that is really that which God is, I am. Let's say that together. That which God is, I am. And that is a deeper realization about our divine identity. So the talk title for today is A Conscious Sense of Union. And because I like to honor sources, that phrase came from one of our ministers, Reverend Susan Burrell, who is in the Ojai area, and she does a radio program called Living Your Inspired Life. And you might, I don't know what the how you get into it, but anyway, you might try to track it down because she is doing a religious science new thought program. And it's really wonderful with speakers and music and all kinds of things, so Living Your Inspired Life. And she used that phrase with me one day. She said, what I want is a conscious sense of union. And that was actually her paraphrase of an Ernest Holmes quotation that's in this book, This Thing Called You. This is one of the most beautiful books you can own. It's worth having in your library because it will teach you that Kingdom 4 realization of that which God is, I am. So it's really an advanced teaching, I would say, about science of mind. So here is the quotation. You must catch and the vision you must catch and hold is the consciousness of a union so complete and perfect that you find no difference between your own being and God. The two are one. I'll say it again. The vision you must catch and hold is the consciousness of a union so complete and perfect that you find no difference between your own being and God. And now I want to read you the whole page on which that quotation is. So just breathe. You like to be read to, don't you? There is a pattern of perfection at the center of your being which has never been touched by disease or misfortune. Your intellect senses this through intuition. Your imagination feels it by divine right. Your inward consciousness knows it through faith. What you are trying to do is to awaken your whole being to spiritual awareness. It is the intellect and the subconscious self which need renewing. The spirit neither sleeps nor slumbers. The spirit is God. Any maladjustments in your life will be healed when you realize this perfect center within yourself. I'm going to repeat that line. Any maladjustments in your life will be healed when you realize this perfect center within yourself. The vision you must catch and hold is the consciousness of a union so complete and perfect that you find no difference between your own being and God. The two are one. What thought has planted, thought can uproot. The conditions laid down by mental attitudes, whether or not you are conscious of them, can be changed. If you are experiencing some condition which is unhappy, you must know there is nothing in you that attracts this condition, nothing in you that holds it in place, nothing in you that believes it must be this way. Turn your mind entirely from the condition and think in an exactly opposite manner. Say this, there is nothing in me that can entertain doubt. There is nothing in me that can entertain doubt. There is no fear, discouragement, or uncertainty. There is no fear, discouragement, or uncertainty. I am filled with confidence, with the expectancy of good, and the knowledge that spirit is always triumphant. I know that my word definitely reverses any and every negative condition. Pure science of mind. And you may say, pure science of mind. No. And so I love that Yeah, I notice that I go fundamental every now and then, so I guess I'm in a fundamental stage, fundamental religious science moment. And what he is saying so beautifully, and it's so true, this is our path. This is the path we walk in Science of Mind, that there is a pattern of perfection at the center of your being, and that any dis-ease, discord will be healed as you turn to that center and stay there. He didn't say that part, and stay there in consciousness. And that the powerful thing to do is to hold the consciousness of a perfect and complete union, for a more perfect union between you and God as active spiritual practice. And to know that conditions that have been laid down by your mind can be changed, and that nothing in you holds it in place. This is the legacy, this is the promise, this is the power of our path. And what I know is that a consistently practiced conscious sense of union with God on a daily basis and as consistently as possible leads to a new experience of the flow of good. And so that's what I want to talk to you about. I've had some interesting personal learning recently, and hopefully I will be a model in this sharing for using your life as a learning experience and for developing a conscious sense of union. By the way, before I get into my story, I was listening to the tape of a woman who works with past life karmic stuff, and she said everybody's born with 7 lessons that they bring in from other lifetimes. I don't know. I can't verify this, but it's an interesting idea. And she said all of the lessons are the same. It's about knowing your oneness with God in the middle of something difficult. Can you know your oneness with God on the way to the guillotine? Can you know your oneness with God in the middle of a difficult divorce? Can you know your oneness with God in the midst of illness? Whatever it may be, and if you didn't do it then, you'll be doing it now. So the idea is, can you know your oneness with God in the now, in whatever it is that you are experiencing? So I was in, even for me, an extraordinary state of insanity a couple of months ago, and I had set too many things in motion at one time. I had said yes to far too many traveling speaking engagements. I can't tell you how grateful I am you are in San Diego. Thank you so much. And to be in San Diego. And I had been whipping things up to even an extraordinary frenzy for me. I was bothered by a couple of things that were in my mind. It was a Tuesday morning, I think. It was July 13th. I was about 5 minutes away from doing my yoga practice. I had the mat laid out. I was ready. I put some clothes in to wash in my washing machine, which is in my hallway behind a door, and I noticed that some of the detergent had dripped, and I thought, I better clean that up. Instead, a note to self, when you think there's something on the floor to clean up, do it right away. And so I was passing through the hallway, walking way too fast, everything in my head, and I slipped on the detergent. And as I said it to Stillamar, it was a very clean fall. I didn't realize that was a funny thing to say. but my right heel went out in front of me, and my left knee went straight down on my kneecap and on a wooden floor. Could have been tile, could have been worse. Didn't hurt anything else, but as I sat back down, I could see my skin over my kneecap folding in. And I went, I just broke my kneecap. And so I sat there and apologized to my kneecap for providing the means by which I would learn a conscious sense of union. Although I didn't have that, I did not have that phrase in my mind at the moment. But I did apologize because I knew I was about to learn. I got the lesson right away. It's like, you know, I started getting the lesson and I began to pray. And I moved immediately out of the realm of human control because I had none, and I moved into the realm of divine control, and I began to scoot over, after the prayer was done, to scoot over to a phone. Another note to self, make sure you have a phone that you can reach from the floor. And so, you know, I began the phone calls and all of that sort of thing, and I really could feel, as long as I didn't move my leg, it didn't hurt, which was a great blessing. I was glad I hadn't hurt my back, because that's tremendously bad pain. And I noticed that as I was sitting there in prayer with nothing else to do but pray, and having made phone calls, that the forms of good started arriving at my house. Good first came in the form of my daughter and her boyfriend, who began to assist me. And then they came in the form of the ambulance. And I got taken, first of all, in one of those cool chairs that get you upstairs. That was, like, really cool. And then on a stretcher in the ambulance. It was just like TV. I'm talking to the guy saying, wow, this is just like TV, you know, and I'm watching the scene out the back window. So I was, like, in my experience and watching my experience and in my experience. And I went to Coronado Hospital where for God knows what reason, but anyway, that's where my attending physician is. And the last time I had been admitted there was 25 years ago when my daughter was born. So it had been a while since I'd been admitted. Because I was in an ambulance, it was a direct admit. Now, that's brilliant. And I ended up getting, as a surgeon, this young guy who travels with the U.S. soccer team who just happened to be there that day. In fact, people kept saying to me, how'd you get Dr. Valletta? And I wish I had said, from a conscious sense of union. But but I didn't have that phrase in mind yet because I didn't know I was doing this talk yet, or I hadn't figured out the topic title. So I began to really get the idea of the forms of good flowing when I was back at home after the surgery, and the physical therapist showed up, and he was this young Japanese-American guy who had just started going to the Unity Center. And he started doing Donna Eden energy medicine exercises on me, as well as, you know, regular physical therapy, which is usually pretty earth plane. But he had this whole spiritual thing. We looked at each other. We said, we understand each other. And I thought, my God, if I just hold still long enough and open up my eyes, I see that everything is provided for me. Now, we teach this, and I know this, but I got significantly slowed down to have the experience. And I want you to know I'm still slowed down, and it's a great blessing. I am making those trips. I just came back from Peru. That was cool. But Carl Jung said, haste is the devil, which I completely agree with. If we will slow down enough to actually feel the moment that we are in and to be in the conscious sense of union, we will see how often the forms of good arrive in full and on time. In full and on time, in just the perfect moment. And it's about maintaining the conscious sense of union, and it is about opening one's eyes to see. And the powerful experience is not about making good happen, it's about making it welcome. And it is our consciousness and our willingness, and that's a Michael Beckwith phrase, it is our consciousness and our willingness to be in that state of union that becomes the doorway through which the good can come. So I'm still slowed down. My entire life is like a mindfulness practice. I am actually conscious of pretty much every step, and if I am not, then I lose my footing in one way or another. So it's very interesting. I'm very different from the frenzied being racing through her hallway and slipping. And the shift for me has been into an experience of every moment where no matter what the moment is, I say, what is this moment? In other words, what is the gift of this moment and what is here? Even in the empty hours. Do you know what I mean by that? Even in the empty hours, you can slow down enough and remember the truth, God and I are one, and say, what is this moment? Because it isn't really empty. The moment really isn't empty. There's a sacred force, a spiritual force that is there with you. So to return it to you now, what I would encourage you to know, and I know that you know this, but it seems like, or at least I'm one who needs reminding, that your life is born out of your consciousness. That your thoughts are the fashioning factor of your life experience, and they provide the filter through which you interpret everything. There's a saying, we see things not as they are, but as we are. That's the truth. I love the affirmation about seeing everybody as our brothers and sisters and acknowledging the humanity of all. That's a particular filter we seek to have, and we want to bring that not just to the people we don't know, but to the ones who are in our life as well. And you know, we're each in a constant choice. Will we live in a conscious sense of union, or will we live in separation? It's the two choices. Kind of unified, kind of separate, it's one or the other. Are you in a conscious sense of union, or are you in a state of separation? The first science of mind principle that clunked for me big time was there is only one problem, and it's separation, and there's only one solution, and it is unity. Too bad we didn't get that organizational name. But only one problem, separation, only one solution, unity. And our entire path, the entire spiritual path that we walk, we're not the only ones, but it's our path, is about healing this, our sense of separation between the self and God. That's what it's all about. And you can see the whole long unfoldment of your life as a journey toward oneness, if you want to see it that way, if you want to see it that way. And you know, there's a classic story in the New Testament, and it is the story of the prodigal son. Do you know that story? Yes. Oh, yes. So the prodigal son is the story of two brothers. The younger one, meaning the less awake, asks for his part of the estate, his father's estate, and God always says yes. Nan said so. God always says yes. And so the son was given, you know, his money and estate, and he went off into the far country, and as the story says, he spent it in riotous living. Woohoo! And he woke up with the pigs. He woke up with the swine and had an aha moment. Have you ever been at the bottom and had an aha moment? You know, his aha moment was even the servants in my household or in my father's household were doing better than this. And so he, from that moment of awakening, he began the journey back. And the prodigal son story is the story of any of us, and in any moment that we fall into the far country, and God lets us go there, you know, because God doesn't operate to say yes or no. It's our only yes. But it is no matter how, in fear, in debt, in illness, in addiction, in doubt, in relationship trouble, have I left out anything? You are. No matter how far in the far country you are, the turn is possible. And it's about turning around and coming back to a conscious sense of union. And in the beautiful story, the son comes back to the father, and the father sees him from afar off and comes running to him. You know, because the boy doesn't know if he's going to meet with condemnation or what, and he gives him a beautiful cloak and a ring, and he says, all that I have is yours. There's another brother, but that's for a different talk. So, and this is exactly it. The minute, that's a really good story. So the minute we turn, the greeting is there. If we will make the turn. And it's about turning away from all of the forms of separation that surround you. Life is pretty interesting these days. And I don't ever pretend that people don't or shouldn't have going on what they have going on, because after all, it's the material for learning. I'm a perfect example of that. But it's to turn away from all the forms of separation and begin that simple statement, God and I are one. Please say that. God and I are one. And two more times. God and I are one. God and I are one. Our first step out of separation is to give up blame. Whether we're blaming the economy or the president or your parents or yourself or somebody in the household or whatever it might be, you cannot go to heaven in the hell of blame. It's to give up blame and to start accepting personal responsibility for what moves through your consciousness. It's about watching your thoughts. It's simply about watching your thoughts. You know, I had an interesting aha last Sunday. I happened to be in Denver, hanging out in the hotel room, watching the Sunday morning news-type programs. And I think, is it Fareed Zacharias or Zacharias Fareed? Fareed is the first name? Okay. Zacharias. Really good. He was really good. And he had these it was a very balanced program. And, of course, I agreed with everything they said. No, they agreed with everything I think. That's why, of course, I liked it. But he had these really interesting speakers on who were saying that for all intents and purposes, Al-Qaeda has been decimated. That their leadership has been decimated, that they're down to a group of about 400 people, 400 to 500 people that are unskilled. And yet they are huge in our minds. In our collective American mind, they are huge. Now, I don't dispute, this is not to start a controversial topic, but I don't dispute that they're radical Islamic elements. Good God, they're radical science of mind elements and radical Christian elements and all of that. You know, there is radical being on the planet. But the terrorism is in our minds. That is really interesting to me. I leave you with that. It's about watching our thoughts and to notice when your thoughts take you into the far country away from your conscious sense of conscious union with God. When do your thoughts take you in the far country into the realm of effect? This is not to deny that there aren't economic challenges, work challenges, and all the other things that I mentioned. But our responsibility, our path, is about turning away from the forms of separation to know a greater truth, because only in that consciousness can the change begin to happen. Does that make sense to you? If your mind is filled with the problem, you're going to create more of the problem. A little bit of dealing with the problem is good to say, what's my strategy? You know? And since I'm developing a conscious sense of union, what's my strategy here and what is it that I can know? We cannot get to a new place with the same old consciousness. So Emma Curtis Hopkins is a really wonderful teacher about welcoming in the forms of our good. And so there are some affirmations that I'd love to have you say with me. First of all, close your eyes, if you would. And just take a deep breath and direct your breath into your heart center. Just feel the passage of your breath into your heart. And right there, you contact the indwelling presence that is your higher wisdom self. And I know we went there pretty quickly, but just be there. And it is the self in you that sees with the eye of wisdom that is also the eye of love. And just take a moment to ask your higher wisdom self to guide you. And let it bring up in you right now, without censoring, your most cherished form of good that you would like to experience. What is your deepest heart's desire for good in this moment? And what is the form or the experience of it? And so the first Emma affirmation is this: I covenant with God for my good. Let's say that together. I covenant with God for my good. And what that means is that you turn your full attention and reliance upon spirit for the manifestation of this good. And you let your mind be filled with, I covenant with God for my good. Please repeat again. I covenant with God for my good. The second affirmation is, in my idea of good, there is no mixture of evil. Please repeat. In my idea of good, there is no mixture of evil. There is no way that your good can be bad. And your good doesn't come with something that is not good. And so when you walk the path of unfolding good from a conscious sense of union with God, in your idea of good, there is no mixture of evil. Let's say it as an affirmation again. In my idea of good, there is no mixture of evil. The third one is actually a statement to spirit. Looking steadfastly at thee, there is no evil on my pathway. Let's say that together. Looking steadfastly at thee, there is no evil on my pathway. In other words, when we keep our eye focused on the reality of God, we know that there is only good on the path that we walk. That's a deep one. Breathe that one in, and let's say it again. Looking steadfastly at thee, there is no evil on my pathway. And finally, we complete again with the first one. I covenant with God for my good. Once again, I covenant with God for my good. Very nice. Take a breath. Open your eyes. So Dr. Kathy Ann Lewis is one of our ministers also. She's up in the Seattle area, and I went with her and a small group of women from her church to Peru, which was really fun. And just as part of the arrival of good when I needed it, I needed lots of help walking there because I was still in my leg brace. And when I would arrive at some steps that I didn't know how I was going to manage, there was always somebody there. There was always somebody there. Always somebody there. Always somebody there. You know, when we live in a conscious sense of union, something's there. There's always something there. But she has a lovely phrase. I called her this morning, told her I was quoting her. She says that we're part of God's spiritual ecology. In other words, that when we keep our consciousness high, when we are seeking that conscious sense of union with God, when we are purifying out, thinning out, dispelling all of the thoughts by which we terrorize ourselves about people, places, and things and conditions, and when we just let those be, but we turn to that awareness of God and I are one, our consciousness is actually helping maintain the balance of this planet. Can you feel that? That we actually, by the health of our thinking, support the health and the balance and the right relationship of all things in creation. So please repeat after me. I am part of God's spiritual ecology. And so if you think that our focus in Science of Mind is too much on the self, sometimes people say that, please know that everything that you do is truly for all of life. All right. So I'm going to close now. It's been delightful to be with you. And I will just leave you with this idea, that no matter how far you have gone into the far country, no matter how empty the hours are, there is always a spiritual presence and a spiritual power that is waiting to greet you. It's like a blazing fire in an empty farmhouse there for you. Thank you so much.